So looks like we're on the air, Bob.
Excellent.
How's
Welcome to the inaugural.
the inaugural? How's life on the West Coast?
Well, I'd like to say that that's a very true picture of what we normally see out here on the West Coast, but we've been a little bit below seasonal on our temperatures. Sunshine today, so it's looking good.
Well, it's pretty good here at Border Pole Central. Yeah, people watching this will probably wonder, what the heck are these guys talking about, you know?
Well, if you've followed anything at all, this particularly in Western Canada or Western United States for that matter, we've had just a horrific spring. Like somebody said the other day, and in a joking manner, we scheduled summer for August 4th, and then we'll get back into winter on the 5th again. But
Well, we have a fairly nice summer-like day today here in the Blue Water Country. But listen, our first crack at the program here. I guess we should tell the folks why we're doing this. I'll start off by saying that this is kind of the add-on to the Border Pole Journal, which we launched. Or relaunched, I guess, on Substack, and we're trying to extend the range, if you will. So many of the technology platforms now permit you to have podcasting and video that I guess we thought maybe this is a good way to reach our community around the world. Essentially, make it easier for folks to know what our mission is and what we're doing, and we're still planning on our fall global forum. So this would be one way for us to promote both the various topics and ideas, and the whole Border Pole community is so diverse from the time we started back in 2003. So. If folks are wondering why we're having this kind of armchair discussion of subjects, that's the way I guess we're planning on doing it.
Well, I think also too, it's a good venue to try and reach out to a more diverse audience, I guess is the best way to say it. Younger people are looking more for podcasts, and they're not looking for the whole written formats and the like. They want to see something that they could perhaps interact with. So, as this progresses, maybe we can get into that.
Well, as we planned, we're gonna hopefully have the opportunity to interview people in our community. The frequency of our podcast at the moment is a weekly 15-minute sort of overview of the week's events. So we're starting this on a Friday, the 20th, and then hopefully we'll do the 27th a week from now. And we have lots of information to natter about. So it's a very convenient way for us to talk to our members and to promote I guess our mission, which is still, I think, something that is worth doing. Clearly we're doing it. One of the other issues is that to follow some of the news that is of interest to the community on migration, human mobility. And I don't know, this morning I got a thing from the Canadian perspective. The government is talking about establishing a digital identity and facial recognition for air travel. Let me just give you a quick thing. It says the Trudeau government has announced it's working with airlines to consider requiring digital identity documents and biometric data like facial recognition for pre-aircraft boarding requirements. I thought we already had all kinds of programs where you paid money to be kind of shepherded through
Well,
the
I guess
procedures.
part of that is right now it's like a voluntary opting in, You can choose to do it by paying the funds to get the security clearances and all the checks that's needed to get your border crossing card, your secure entry or fast entry, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I guess if the government is going to something where it's required, it takes away that optional factor. And
Well, this it says here that they're going to require digitized identification documents, digital identity documents, and biometric travel documents. I always thought, aren't our passports already RFID'd? So isn't that a,
I believe they are, and I'd have to check mine to see, but
it just the according to this report from TNC, the government notes that four unidentified air carriers are planning to implement innovative identity management solutions soon. Problem I have with this is that when they start doing facial recognition and they start building databases, it comes down to okay, who's going to be using it for what? And I always get a little nervous. When a promise is made about how is this going to make your passing through the checkpoint, either getting on the aircraft or re-entering the country so much easier. And it seems it hasn't really done that with the kind of success that they've been promoting for at least a decade. Forget COVID. I mean, just it's just not been that. And you're still waiting in line in overcrowded airports. You're still, coming up to a border crossing, and there's only three lanes to get in. It doesn't matter how much technology they throw in.
yeah. Well, coupled with what you mentioned before, wasn't it just in the news within the last month where the government was tracking us by our cell phones,
Oh yeah, geo
looking at
tracking.
where we were and where we weren't, and
Yeah.
nobody knew anything about it until a request for a proposal came up to figure out what they wanted to do with all this data that they were collecting that nobody knew they were collecting. So if they're already doing that, are they just trying to legalize it now? I don't know.
Well, it's the old saying that we're here from the government, we're here to help you, and especially I'm particularly curious about free stuff, because the previous programs that were supposed to make your transit through the borders was a paid thing, you had to pony up money to the agencies to get the card that and it's ostensibly the cost was for the actual administration and that security clearance and all that stuff, but this is altogether different. So I'm curious.
Well, as I said before, we've got we have the Nexus card, which we pay for
That's
every
it, yep.
3 to 5 years. And coupled with that is that you're basically signing away all kinds of different things where we are allowing them to do security checks based on your fingerprints, based on computer checks, based on this, based on that. And I've talked to a few people who said, well, I'm just not really comfortable with them knowing about that or having that. And what are they going to do with it after the fact? Does it expire if you decide next year that you don't want your Nexus card when it's renewed? Do they get rid of that information?
Well,
If you can
information
go to
on
this
the
state
internet's
where
forever.
it's free, or not really free, but it's required to get on an airplane to come to Canada. What are they going to do with that information if you're an infrequent traveler where you maybe only come once or twice in a couple of years?
Well, moreover, this is talking about more international. I'm wondering at what point does the World Economic Forum's known travel digital identity program kick in? I'm automatically getting kind of nervous when the WEP's involved in this, because it's a non-governmental body, and what are the checks and balances on the World Economic Forum? Zero. So, this is again part of a good idea, but it could be like a good idea that goes way off into an area that nobody really feels comfortable with.
Well, I think that comes up too with what was on the news the other night, where the immigration service in Canada, especially from overseas, has been farming out visa processing to private companies. And what's the security on that? If the information is going back and forth across the digital wire, is this going to be the same kind of thing where we're going to farm this out to make the entry requirements easier for the border officials here? Is that part of what this is about? I don't know. Can it be, the government has always said we want to do more with less. Is this another aspect of that? I don't know.
Well, we'll watch this one because this is clearly an initiative that has more than just the public security ministry in Canada focusing on this issue. It looks like as I say, in the rest of the article, it goes on to talk about how the WEP thinks this is a good idea. Well, then right away, it's transnational, which leads me to some other news that it's happening, it's not really being reported in the so-called mainstream media, or is these growths of these groups of countries that now seem to be emulating a kind of a quasi-economic military establishment. You have the economic growth of the BRIC here, which most people don't know is Brazil, India, Russia, and China. Four countries that are apparently looking at expanding their influence in the world. And when you think about the current geopolitical situation, the impact on human mobility and migration and refugee patterns, when you have a bloc of China, India, Russia, and Brazil, that's 40% of the population of the world. And there's not a whole lot of discussion, it seems, in the media, or certainly in political circles, about this. And with the current war in Ukraine, which is one of the protagonists in this, is Russia. Brazil and China and India are pretty quiet.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned Brazil, and until you actually had mentioned Brazil and the size of the population, I have really never viewed them as being a big player or a major player in this. So that in itself is quite interesting.
Well, they're a
Maybe,
big country.
well,
I mean,
very,
if you
yeah.
look at the map of South America, it's a big piece of property.
Big spot, yeah.
And they have a fairly charismatic president who is he's in the news, but not because the media particularly likes him. But when you see the relationship between those four countries, you really have to wonder. And they're not that backwards. They keep talking about developing countries. These aren't developing countries. They're developed
No,
countries.
of course.
China has a space program. Brazil has a functioning aviation program. Russia has clearly nuclear weapons and it's a big technology base. And India is the second most populous country on the planet. And how much of our Western efforts to do business focus on India, from call centers to chip making, So this is this these four countries are in my opinion, are in the background doing a lot of or having a great influence, I should say, on other parts of the world that we're not particularly aware of at the moment, because they seem to be focused on, interests of Europe and North America, and that's, I
And
think, it's
interesting too,
mistaken.
you mentioned of those four countries, when I sit back and think from where we live, we're probably not on good relations with at least three of those four. I don't think we've really annoyed Brazil, but I think we've annoyed the other ones tremendously, so.
Well, the other group which I was going to bring up, but I lost it on my screen here, which was this Quad, which is Australia, Japan, India again, interesting, in the US, which are the other kind of block that suddenly has come up in, especially in military terms, because the Australians, the Japanese, and the Indians are with the Americans, and at the moment, in fact, the American president is in South Korea as we speak. This is all about a counterbalance to the previous group we discussed, which is the BRIC. Now that's funny because India has feet in both camps.
Maybe they're just smart.
Well, it's a clever move, not without its perils, I would think. But once again, the people who are involved in that, Canada isn't, by the way. We're looking at another evolving geopolitical power, which I think will have impacts on the economy, especially as we look at what's going now with inflation and the war, and it, so there's a myriad of issues that these two blocks, which are new to the game, I might say, to the previous bunch since European Union, NAFTA, and whatever. This is very interesting.
Well, it's certainly going to take the wind out of a lot of people sails here in North America in particular, I guess. We're actually becoming not irrelevant but less important because since things are moving forward by the look of it.
Yeah, there's lots going on. You've got the Czechs tightening entry requirements for Ukrainian refugees. For some reason, they decided that they're not going to have just willy-nilly open borders to these unfortunate folks who are the victims of this war. You've got Italians who want to train migrants to work on construction because apparently Italians don't want to work on construction, so they're going to do that. You've got a suggestion that the Ukrainian conflict has to end before there are 20 million African migrants heading to Europe because they won't have anything to eat. Because the unintended consequences of the sanctions now is that there's no fertilizer being shipped out of the largest producers of fertilizer and so forth, and so the downstream effect is that these poor countries that were relying, like Sri Lanka, is another example, has run out of fuel, to run the country. There's a lot of the unintended consequences of the sanctions are pretty horrendous,
Very much so,
and so it's we're not even talking about stuff close to home here in North America, where we have at the southern border of the U.S. apparently not much of a consequence to illegal migration, drug smuggling, and whatever. It looks like there's basically a absence of serious border enforcement there for reasons best known to those who are in charge.
Well, we've had that on our southern border as well. So maybe it's just the term southern. Maybe we should come up with something else here.
I
Maybe
guess, I
fix it.
guess. Well, broadly speaking, we've talked about this before. We've got a lot of leadership issues around the world, which on the issue of borders has, and migration management is basically over the last couple of decades decided that we don't need borders. We don't need to manage migration. Just let it go on its own. And in other words, if it's human beings have a right to be wherever they want to be. Okay, that if you subscribe to that, that's fine. But where do you how do you manage that? They don't seem to. There's never a plan on what to do with the millions of people who are moving around the world. And there's like I don't see a big movement to China of migrants, or a big movement to Russia. I mean, we talked about the BRIC. Nobody goes to these places, out of so. It's fine that there's a push effect that brings millions of folks into other parts of the world, primarily Western Europe and North America. But the plans for resettlement and the whole impact on the host community seems to be, well, we'll see how it works out. And don't challenge, the logic of what we're doing seems to have been the prevailing attitude.
You have to remember, Tom, when we grew up as kids, there were lots of games that were played. And in some respects, most of the leadership or lack thereof that we have are probably not much more advanced than that. So what you're actually talking about, I think, is the Olly Ollie Oxenfree program. You make it here, you're okay.
Yeah. Well, we also have a question of really unserious leadership, in my view, and it's not just. It seems to be a global phenomena of let's do laissez-faire, because that's the, if it works out, it does. If it doesn't, who cares? But at the moment, when you talk about the impact of the economic, social, and environmental situation we find ourselves globally, this is going to be very, very challenging. Because if you think it's tough buying gas at $5 a gallon or $4 a gallon or $2 a liter, whatever it is, wherever you are, wait till the folks who didn't have that in the first place in a lot of these marginal societies in terms of their economy and so on, they're going to be difficult to negotiate with, I mean, you can't just close your eyes to this. The precipitousness, I think, of the situation at the moment is being ignored by what I call the unserious leadership around the world. Only unserious leaders would start wars. Only unserious leaders would collapse economies. Only unserious leaders would decide that it's better to be looking at the culture to imitate politics. And so there's no particular country you can point. It seems to be a global phenomena which goes back 20, 30 years. Okay, so fine. But when the proverbial poop hits the fan, who's going to be around to fix it? So, I think we have lots to talk about in the weeks and months ahead on our armchair discussions here at the Border Pole TV, Border Pole Journal. Well, I guess what else are we, for the first time out, for all the folks watching, this is our first kick at the cat, and we're hoping you like it. We
Yeah, let
invite
us
you,
know. Comments
absolutely.
are welcome.
Yeah. We're hoping to, as time goes on and we build up our viewership, that we get to interview and talk to people who are key to sort of the questions that we raise in our armchair discussions here. So would, if you'd like to contribute your opinion or come on board in one of our discussions, we welcome that. Joining Border Pole's easy. Just go to our website, www.borderpole.org. It's over here. There. Over there. The mirror. Yeah, right. And let us know. So we're available on Substack soon as a podcast, and on Rumble and on Locals as the video that we were doing. And we hope to do it every Friday, 15 minutes or so. And Bob and I are looking forward to hearing from the folks.
Yeah. Whether you like us or whether you don't, please, any kind of feedback is better than none.
That's right. That's right. All right, Bob. Look, you have a good weekend.
And you as well.
We'll talk to you next Friday.
If not before.
Of course. Take care. Bye.